हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे God. So then Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 6, sixth chapter, The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. On page 150, from verse 26137. Srila Madhvacharya, commenting on the aphorism Drishyate 2, Vedanta Sutra 216, quotes the Bhavishya Purana as follows. Rigyaju samatarvas cha bharatam pancharatrakam mula ramayanam chaiva veda ityeva shabdita Puranani chayani ha Vaishnavani vido vidhu Swatha pramanyam etesham natra kinchit vichar yate. The Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, Mahabharata, Pancharatra, and the original Ramayana are all considered Vedic literature, right? Because you also have these other Ramayanas that are given that can give some backup aspects to the stories. But the point is that the main Ramayana, that's the one, and that means Valmiki. So Tulsi Das, this one, that one, so many, that, no, we're not so worried about those. The Puranas, such as the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Naradi Purana, Vishnu Purana, and Bhagavat Purana, are especially meant for Vaishnavas. And are also Vedic literature, right? Because the Brahma Vivarta, then that's also because it has all those pastimes of Radha and Krishna. As such, whatever is stated within the Puranas, Mahabharata and Ramayana is self-evident. There's no need for interpretation. The Bhagavad Gita is also within the Mahabharata. Therefore, all the statements of the Bhagavad Gita are self-evident. There's no need for interpretation. And if we do interpret the entire authority of the Vedic literature is lost, right? So it means we're trying to understand we see from different angles, like you can see even the acharyas when they translate something, then sometimes they'll say, like this, and then you could also look at it like this. They give the different alternatives. So the vichar is there. But the main thing is abhideya means we're taking these authoritative statements and then we're trying to apply them into our life in a way to attain pure devotional service. So that means then we're using the direct. The interpretation we're not interested in. So it's not that Anuman's not being applied to see how it fits into situations that may not be directly discussed, but it's based on the authority of the scripture. We're starting from the scripture and trying to see how to attain pure devotional service, and then seeing what the acharyas say, how they're expressing everything. So therefore, then we're trying to appreciate and understand that. We're not starting from our own motives, our own interest, and then trying to adjust the shastra to support that. That we're not doing. Because otherwise, the entire authority of the Vedic literature is lost. And Prabhupada says entire. He doesn't just say something. He just says it's lost. 26, 138, 144, right? So he's saying all this because he's trying to get Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to stop interpreting. He has his own idea how the impersonalism is the way to go. And so then, because of that, then he is trying to interpret the verses to mean that. And the point is the verses don't say that. So then he has to interpret basically every verse, every word, because the direct meaning says devotion to Vishnu. and the personal and the devotional. So he has to keep changing everything. And so that means then the authority of the Vedic literature is lost. So he's taking the Vedanta Sutra's authority, but by his interpretation, the authority of it's lost. So he could take anything, you know, and take Romeo and Juliet and then, you know, develop a whole philosophy there, you know, like that. You know, that they didn't actually die at the end. It's just that then they, you know, understood the absolute truth. So then they merged into that absolute. So that one, that illusion of the difference between, Romeo and Juliet now becomes merged into the oneness of the, you know, the Brahmananda. Yes. So, yeah, he could do that and just get the same results. So why waste your time with Vedanta Sutra? 2:6, 138 to 144. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "The Brahma Sutra compiled by Srila Vyasadeva is as radiant as the sun. One who tries to interpret its meaning simply covers that sunshine with a cloud," right? Because the sun's still there. It still has the value. But you're covering it with the cloud. And who gets affected by it? Not the Vedanta Sutra, but ourselves. All the Vedas and literature that strictly follows the Vedic principles explain that the Supreme Brahman is the absolute truth. Okay, the greatest of all and a feature of the Supreme Lord. Actually, the Supreme Absolute Truth is a person. The aspect may be there, but you can't explain the Supreme Absolute Truth as formless.
Could you repeat the last point? Because you froze in the middle of it.
I froze.
Sorry.
That's not keeping me warm, that one.
It's gone white, the signal, but for some reason you froze for a bit.
Maybe the router is a Mayavadi.
Maybe.
Okay, actually, this is okay. All the Vedas and literature that strictly follows the Vedic principles explain that the Supreme Brahman is the absolute truth, right? So you're trying to establish the absolute truth. That's the first stage. But then the point is that Supreme Brahman is a person. So the greatest of all and a feature of the Supreme Lord. Right? Actually, the Supreme Absolute Truth is the person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full with all opulences. You are and we call him the Supreme Brahman, Supreme Absolute, the Absolute Truth, you know, like that. Then we're just bringing out those features of Krishna, but it's actually Krishna is the person. He in his personal form is the original and is the cause of all that. Then we have that someone can appreciate that there's something absolute beyond us, because otherwise we tend to take ourselves as quite absolute, right? You know, like that. You are trying to explain him as impersonal and formless. Wherever there's an impersonal description of the Vedas mean to establish that everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's transcendental and free. Everything belonging to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental and free of mundane characteristics, right? So when they're talking about that aspect of the Supreme, the Brahman, the all-pervading, they're just showing how Krishna is everything, how everything belongs to him. He is taking care of everything. So then the difficulty comes, and why is this an important point? Because we could say, well, you just talk about the person. But the difficulty comes is that we think then we're still the controller and enjoyer, because if everything's Krishna, then I connect myself with everything, and that way I'm always connected with Krishna, and I do whatever I like, and therefore I'm Krishna conscious. But that's the whole point, is that we will make ourselves the center. So the idea of the absolute truth is we're trying to point out there's someone greater than us, and all the things that we're working with are connected to that person who's greater than us. And devotion means connecting to him in a favorable way without karma or jnana. So that drops out the impersonalist, that drops out the sahajiyas. Right? So only pure devotional service. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, whatever Vedic mantras describe the absolute truth impersonally, only to prove in the end that the absolute truth is a person. The Supreme Lord is understood in two features, impersonal and personal. If one considers the Supreme Personality of Godhead in both features, he can actually understand the absolute truth. He knows that the personal understanding is stronger because we see that everything is full of variety. No one can see anything that is not full of variety. Footnote 36. This is a quotation from Sri Chaitanya Chandradoi Nataka 667 by Kavi Karnapur. Right? No one can see anything that is not full of variety. You know, anything you have, even you have a stack of bananas, you look at it, each banana is different. If you look at the stacks, each stack of bananas is different. You look at the trees, each one is different. So there's always variety. Everything in the cosmic manifestation emanates from the absolute truth, remains in the absolute truth. Our friends are back. And after annihilation, again enters the absolute truth. The personal features of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are categorized in three cases, namely ablative, instrumental, and locative. Okay. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states this in his Amrita Prabaha Vasya, that according to the injunctions of the Upanishads, quote, the Supreme Absolute Truth is he from whom everything emanates, end quote. It is understood that the whole cosmic manifestation emanated from Brahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth. I mean, I don't know if it's present dictionaries are like this, but if you go back to those dictionaries from like, you know, 60s or so, then when they said God, it just said the Supreme Absolute Person from whom everything is created like that. So they had a closer understanding of the absolute truth. Nowadays, who knows what it says? The creation subsists by the energy of the Supreme Brahman, and after annihilation, merges into the Supreme Brahman. From this, we can understand that the absolute truth can be categorized in three cases, ablative, instrumental, and locative. According to these three cases, the absolute truth is positively personified. Ablative is which one? Haladhar Nitai, you know these things.
Maharaj, no idea, Maharaj. I'm very poor
no
in grammar.
No idea what ablative is. Do you know Devarshi?
Once again, I'll check.
No. Ablative, let's see. Ablative, I think it means from where it comes from. Because you have the subject, the object, the instrumental. Then you're going to have the dative means, so what results there. Then I think you're going to have the ablative. Which is that is the source of something or the cause of something. And then you're going to have the locative or the place. So then if that's there, then the ablative means he's the source of everything. Instrumental, he's the one in which, you know, it's all happening through his energies. And then the locative, he's the situation of everything, how it's went. So depending upon how it's doing, it's establishing him, but it also then your Brahman aspect becomes dealt with. And in the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1, yato va imani bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yad prayant yabisham bishanti yad vijigyasasva tad brahma. This was the answer given by Father Varuna when asked by his son, Varuni Bhrigu, about the absolute truth. Right, because Bhrigu was originally born from Lord Brahma, right? But because of a curse, then he had to take, that body was destroyed, and he took birth from Varuna. So in this way, then, he's known as Varuni Bhrigu. And so this conversation, then, was at that point. So in their discussion about the absolute truth, in this mantra, the words yata, the absolute truth, from which the cosmic manifestation is emanated, is in the ablative case. That Brahman, by which this universal creation is maintained, is in the instrumental case, yena. And that Brahman into which the whole cause of manifestation merges is in the locative case. Yeah, so then what was it? Yata, okay, that's ablative. And then yena, yato va imani bhutani jayante, yena jatani jivati, yat prayant yavisham vishanti. Like that. So showing here in the Upanishad that these three cases are there. And so it's establishing all three aspects of the Supreme Lord. Nice. 2, 6, 145, 146. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead wished to become many, he glanced over the material creation. Before the creation, there were no mundane eyes or mind. Therefore, the transcendental nature of the Absolute Truth's mind and eyes is confirmed. Srila Prabhupada, in the Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3, it is said, Tad aikshata bahu syam praja ye ya. This statement confirms the fact that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead wishes to become many, the cause of manifestation arises simply by his glancing over material energy. It may be noted that the Supreme Lord glanced over the material nature before the creation of this cause of manifestation. Before the creation, there were no material minds or material eyes. Therefore, the mind by which the Supreme Personality of Godhead desired to create is transcendental, and the eyes by which he glanced over material nature are also transcendental. Thus, the Lord's mind, eyes, and other senses are all transcendental, right? Because he's saying that in the beginning of the creation, when there was no mind and no eyes, therefore, the Lord glanced over the material energy, and then everything was created. So that establishes that he has transcendental senses. He has transcendental eyes. He has transcendental mind. Because otherwise, then that means he was there before, and these things are there. So that's the whole idea that they're that's being said is all minds and all eyes are mundane. They're all illusion, right? That means when Brahman gets covered by ignorance, then you get these variety, then you get the senses, then you get the mind and all these things like that. But if that's the case, then why is it the Upanishad is saying that beforehand, that this was all there? So he glanced over the material energy. So that means that's starting there. Because even if you say, oh no, but then, you know, if he's covered by that element of goodness and this and that. But the point is that aspect comes as the further state of the living entity by their description, right? It means that when it's covered by ignorance, then you get the jivas. So when the jivas try to elevate themselves through knowledge, they come to goodness. That goodness now, that then, that knowledge or that jnana, now when Brahman becomes covered by that jnana, now it becomes you know, Ishwara. And then if he's glancing, but the point is the jivas are the one by their thing that's already created this concept. So even they're saying they come from matter, God comes from our idea, all this kind of thing. So all these standard mundane kind of things that people think they're being so, you know, intellectual and so modern about, these have always been there. The Mayavadis have been talking about this forever. All these other schools have been talking these things. So they're not new. That's the whole point. The modern concept that's not in line with the Vedas is actually, you know, is as old as the creation. Because there's always going to be somebody who sees it not according to pure devotional service. It's always there. That. 2, 6, 147, 153. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. The word Brahman indicates the complete Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who is Sri Krishna? That is the verdict of all Vedic literature. The confidential meaning of the Vedas is not easily understood by common men. Therefore, that meaning is supplemented by the words of the Puranas. Right? Because we see the Vedic literature itself, then it is, you know, as we're seeing from these points of the Veda, you know, is being given, you know, and how in these three cases, then the Lord is the supreme and everything like that. So it's just saying by common men, they don't understand these things, you know, like it is. We have to ask around, you know, who knows what this stuff means, right? Because we're talking and all that, and we don't even know what these things mean. But before, people were actually educated in these things. I mean, they talk and they were educated, right? So then that's why then the Puranas are important, because then through the stories and all that, we get an idea and we can remember the story much easier. A technical explanation we may or may not remember. But a story, then we can connect the story and then all the points of the philosophy, how they are laid out in the story, that becomes very easy to meditate on. So that's why then the Puranas are, you know, the fifth Veda, Mahabharata. You know, this aspect is the fifth Veda, because this is then where the Veda is being described so that it's easily accessible for everybody. So how greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men, and all the inhabitants of Brajabhumi. There's no limit to their fortune, because the absolute truth, the source of transcendental bliss, the eternal supreme Brahman, has become their friend. Footnote 37. This quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.32 is spoken by Lord Brahma. The Vedic Apanipada mantra rejects material legs and hands. Yet it states that the Lord goes very fast and accepts everything offered to him. All these mantras confirm that the absolute truth is personal. But the Mayavadis, throwing away the direct meaning, interpret the absolute truth as impersonal. So that's whatever you say, they said, no, but that means this, this means that. So that's the difficulty. They'll never understand because of these indirect interpretations. You can say anything like that. You know, it's just like there, you know, we see here, you know, that above, you know, the cabinet there, there's a fan turning, you know. But we could, you know, I could say, oh, the fan is on the ceiling turning. They said, no, that's not a fan. That's actually an airplane came crashing in, and that's the front of the airplane, you know, poking through the roof, and therefore then it's there. But because it does a nice job of cooling the room, therefore Jagadish Prabhu left it sticking in the ceiling like that. Plus, it's something to talk about when guests come over, because sometimes it really gets boring when guests come in like that and no one says anything. So then they can look at, then you just kind of, you look at the ceiling, and then they ask, well, how did that get there? And then, yeah, you have a whole Megillah that you can discuss and all that, and it goes very, very nicely, right? No? So like that, you can interpret anything. Doesn't matter what it is, you know? Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, yes. You are describing as formless that Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose transcendental form is complete with six transcendental opulences. And it says, oh, are you describing as formless that Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose transcendental form is complete with six transcendental opulences? The Supreme Personality of Godhead has three primary potencies. Are you trying to prove that he has no potencies? Srila Prabhupada. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu now quotes four verses from the Vishnu Purana. 6.7.61-63 and 1.12.69 to explain the different potencies of the Lord in verses 154-157. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted. Right? So now these verses are going to be from the Vishnu Purana. The internal potency of the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, is spiritual as verified by the Shastras. There is another spiritual potency known as Kshetragya, or the living entity. The third potency, which is known as nescience, makes the living entities godless and fills them with fruit of activities. Srila Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita, in Sri Krishna's discourse on the Kshetra and the Kshetragya, it is clearly stated that the Kshetragya is the living entity who knows his field of activities. The living entities in the material world are forgetful of their eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This forgetfulness is called avidya, or nescience. This avidya shakti, the avidya potency of the material world, provokes fruit of activity. Although this avidya shakti, material energy or nescience, is also an energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is especially intended to keep the living entities in a state of forgetfulness. This is due to their rebellious nature towards the Lord. Thus, although the living entities are constitutionally spiritual, they come under the influence of the potency of nescience. How this happens is described in the following verse. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, quoting, O King, the Kshetragya Shakti is the living entity. Although he has the facility to live in either the material or spiritual world, He suffers the threefold miseries or material existence because he is influenced by the avidya, nescience, potency, which covers his constitutional position. This living entity, covered by the influence of nescience, exists in different forms in the material condition. O king, he is thus proportionally freed from the influence of material energy to a greater or lesser degree. Srila Prabhupada. The material energy acts on the living entity in different degrees, according to how he acquires the association of the three modes of material nature. There are 8,400,000 species of life, some inferior, some superior, and some mediocre. The gradations, and we remember, superior means heavenly planets, lower planets is the inferior, and the earth planet, that's the mediocre. The grand gradations of the bodies are calculated according to the covering of material energy. In the lower categories, including aquatics, trees, plants, insects, birds, and so forth, spiritual consciousness is almost non-existent. In the mediocre category, the human form of life, spiritual consciousness is comparatively awakened. In the superior life forms, spiritual consciousness is fully awakened. Then the living entity understands his real position and tries to escape the influence of material energy by developing Krishna consciousness, right? So then when you take up Krishna consciousness, then that becomes the superior life form. And so that's the, yeah. 2.6, 157 to 158. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued quoting. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Satchidananda Vigraha. This means that he originally has three potencies, the pleasure potency, the potency of eternality, and the potency of knowledge. Together, these are called the chit potency, right? So the all together, that's called the chit. So then you have the Samvit Sandini and Ladini. Then that's also known as the chit potency. And then depending upon the Krishna, the Icha, Kriya, and Jnana, their influence on that, then you get manifest the various aspects of the Lord's, his name, his forms, the abode, his pastimes with the devotees. All this is manifest from that influence. And then when these three aspects, the pleasure potency, potency of eternality, potency of knowledge, they also then have that, the Sandini, Samvit, and Ladini, then they're the ones that create all the taste within the activities that are there. So the Kriya Shakti, when that then applies onto the Chit Shakti, then you get the manifestation of a Sandini, Samvit, and Ladini. So then the various activities are performed and all that give the taste. So it's through action that taste is there. That's why through Abhideya or applying the knowledge, that's when you get... A minute ago, somehow or another, you had a lot more hair than you do now.
Yes, what to do? Shaving sometimes.
Okay,
Maharaj, I wanted to ask you: would it be correct to say, because sometimes devotees they confuse the energy of the Lord and his qualities? So can we say that the qualities of the Lord, like say for example Satchitananda, manifested through his energies, like Samvit Sandini and Hladini?
Means his sarup is him, and so his energies are non-different from him. And so then the Sarup Shakti, that means you have the Sarup, his form, and there's the Sarup Shakti. And the Sarup Shakti then has three, you could say, main features, right? The Vibhava, Prabhava, and Anubhava, right? So the Vibhava is the what we'd call the Chit potency, the Achit, and the Jivas, right? Then the Prabhava, or the one has the influence, that will be the Icha, Kriya, and Jnana. And then the Anubhava, or where that taste is, that's the Samvit, Sandini, and Ladini. Right? So that's all coming because he's Satchidananda. So everything's coming from that principle. That's why then previously Lord Chaitanya was saying, this sambandha abhideyam prayojana, that is knowledge. Everything fits into those three because they're all coming from these three features of Krishna. So the point is that you have that difference, but at the same time, there's a non-difference because that energy is him. Because you can say he's manifesting his form through, you know, by his icha, by his desire, through his internal potency. Like Srila Prabhupada mentions that, you know, Krishna always, he manifests through his internal potency. You know, there's not something else. He's not some other thing is manifesting. He, through his own energy, his internal potency is manifesting. It's because then for the particular pastime and the particular arrangement, then he has a particular form. But he has his original form, but he manifests for that particular situation so that we can appreciate. And he's doing that in all the different realms all simultaneously. So he's in Braj, he's in Mathura, he's in Dwarka, he's in Vaikuntha, he's in Ayodhya, he's in Hastinapur, right? He's in the heavenly planets, he's here. All these different pastimes are going on at once, and all his unlimited, you know, the 24 Vishnumurtis, they're all going on. So through his internal potency, by his desire, this is all going on because he wants to taste all these things. So that principle there is that you have that these can all be taken back into that Satchitananda aspect, and they all have they're all connected to these three forms. Right? Where is it? The pleasure potency, the potency of eternality, and the potency of knowledge. So the pleasure potency then also will have the icha, means the pleasure potency in its anubhava, it will be konsandini. In the prabhava, it'll be called icha. And in the vibhava, it'll be called the internal potency. Does that make sense? So the same sarup shakti, but depending upon the feature, then it will have that particular flavor.
Yes, Maharaj, it makes sense. I'm just trying to remember and write it down. So the manifestation of vibhava will be external, internal, and marginal. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So and that'll be called chit. You know, chit, achit, and the tatasta. Or
but the tatasta. Yes. Right. And then like vibhava. That. Oh, the prabhava will be
icha, kriya, and jnana.
Icha, kriya, and jnana.
Because they're the influence. They're the ones that then get other things to happen. By his desire, then things happen.
Yes.
Right? And then the taste of that desire, you know, the anubhava, that's going to be the samvit, sandini, hladini.
Okay. Now I got
right?
it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's a little.
Yeah, because that's the thing is that means depending on the situation, you can go back and forth between them because they're all representing that aspect of pleasure, of eternality, and of knowledge. But in here, potency of knowledge will mean in this case would mean the chit, you know, that means in samvit, right? Because you have sat, chit, and ananda. Right, so eternality, potency of eternality, sat, potency of knowledge, chit, and potency of ananda, pleasure potency. So because he's sat, chit, ananda, that's why everything and these energies are him, are non-different from him. So as they expand, you take on all these different particular varieties. So that's why we can categorize everything as sambandha abhideya and prayojana. Does that make sense? So we can, with impunity, discuss it in this way. And people are going to say, oh, that's one way to look at it. No, that is the way to look at it. That's Lord Chaitanya. That's what he says.
Okay.
Everything's talking about, because with eternality, then you're going to have relationship. Right? With the knowledge, with chit, you're going to have activities. And with ananda, you're going to have the taste of that rasa and everything. So now, when these three are applied on the internal potency, then you get the manifestation of the realm, the name, the form, the qualities, the pastimes, the devote, all these kind of aspects like that, right? That's coming from the icha applying onto his internal potency, right? when the kriya then is applied onto it, then you're going to get the features of the activities that the devotees perform that therefore give the results that are tasted, right? When the jnana shakti then is applied upon the internal potency, then you get that kind of flavors of the majesty, the flavors of sweetness, and that beauty of the spiritual realm, right? So when it applies itself in this way, then you get, basically you can say the whole spiritual manifestation. And then with that full spiritual manifestation, you get all the aspects of, you know, what is your mood, what kind of rati you have towards Krishna, or your relationship there, what kind of activities you have, and what kind of tastes are there. And that's all coming because of Krishna's desires there. There's the environment of name, form, qualities, and pastimes. And then that's supported by the kriya and jnana, that then for the specific flavor and the specific activities. So then when you see nectar devotion is talking about the particular rati, then it's saying, what are the features that they have? So therefore, what activities they perform, how they respond, right? And so all this becomes combined together. Or let's say now when the icha means, when that's applied upon the, or when you apply all this, let's say, onto the jiva shakti, you know, the tatastha shakti, then you're going to get the associates of the Lord. You're going to get the demigods. You're going to get humans. You're going to get the demons. You're going to get the rakshasas. That will all manifest when the prabhava is applied onto the jiva shakti, right? And so therefore you're going to get those in the spiritual world and then those in the material world. And then the material world are going to be in goodness, passion, and ignorance. Right? Because that's the taste here. So what is sambit, sandini, and ladini in the spiritual world? That becomes goodness, passion, and ignorance here.
Yes.
You understand? So it's the same process. It's just when you apply it on these things, then you're going to get if you apply it onto the material energy, then you would get all the different realms, the 14 planetary systems that are there, all the different names of all the items that are here in the material world, all the activities there in the material world, all the, results that you get in the material world, the activities that people perform, you know, and then like that, you'll get the various tastes, you get the, does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, so the problem is here, that's all illusion, because that's not where it's supposed to be applied. The jivas are supposed to apply themselves under the protection of the chit potency, the internal potency. So if that's there, then it's fulfilling the Lord's icha, because jnana and kriya are supporting that. So the jiva is part of that. He would also be supporting. But when they don't, they take shelter of the external energy, then these same potencies apply. And then, you know, they give an effect in a transformed state. So they don't have their natural, original, eternal, transcendental manifestation. They have some temporary manifestation that doesn't satisfy. Does that make sense?
Yes. So basically we can say it's the same principle applied in action, but just shifts the position, whether it's towards the Lord or his external energy.
Right, exactly.
Okay, thank
because
you.
Because that middle goes one way or the other, just like you see is that we always talk about Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. But you see, in this discussion here with Sarvabhauma Padacharya, he's only talking about Bhagavan, the personal and impersonal.
Yes.
Because if you're taking Paramatma, he's localized personal. But at the same time, he's all pervading and all that. So many of the qualities of the impersonal are being manifest by the Paramatma. So there's only these two aspects, but there may be three features in which you see them. So just by talking about personal and impersonal, you don't have to include Paramatma. So in the same way, as you can talk about the spiritual and you can talk about the material, and the jiva chooses which side he wants to be on. If it's spiritual, it works this way. If the material works this way, there's not a separate tatastha scene going on its own. Right, so that's why when you apply the Icha Kriya and Jnana Shakti is on the Tathasta Shakti, you either get jivas in the spiritual world or jivas in the material world. Right? Yeah. So that's the thing we have to know is how it's working. You know, because the Sandhi, it has both. The twilight is both day and night. It has qualities of both. But depending upon what you're talking about, you bring out the night part or you bring out the day part. You know, if I say, oh, it's twilight, you know, then we should stop. Oh, no, there's still a little bit light left. You know, we can still continue until it gets dark. You know, or if you want to bring out the dark, oh, it's twilight. Oh, yeah, we better get going. It'll be dark soon and then nothing will happen. So you emphasize the dark side. So that's the thing. In the middle, you can get both of those things. But it's with this or with that. So you have Bhagavan, you have the impersonal, and you have Paramatma in the middle. That's why yogis, after the meditation, they come to samadhi, then they either take up devotional service or they merge in Brahman. There's not a special Paramatma, you know, place you're going to sit. It may be through meditating on Paramatma they get to Bhagavan or they get to Brahman. Right? You know, that's why in the Gita it says that the yogi, you know, it's done properly, then he comes to the point of realizing the Supreme Lord. So that's why, I don't know about in the present books, but in the old Gita books, you had the devotee sitting there doing his service and the yogi sitting and doing his meditation. And then the last picture, they were both doing kirtan.
Yeah, that's in the old books.
Yeah, those old pictures were really good.
Thank you, Maharaj.
I guess now you'd have to have somebody on social media or something like that, and how he becomes self-realized or something.
The light is coming from the internet anyway.
Yes. Yeah, Zuckerberg is onto something here, right?
Definitely.
Okay, so that's clear?
Yes, thank you very much. That was very clear. I have to think about it later, you know, come back to it, but it is clear for now.
Yes. So that's why we always discuss everything in connection with this Sambandhabhidaya and Prayojana. Then there's so much, because Krishna is unlimited, the refinement of the different energies and their combinations and how they work together, then that's unlimited. So the knowledge, Ananta Sesh with 1,000 mouths has been talking since, glorifying the Lord since eternity, and still, you know, he'll always be doing. So that's the point. It's just unlimited. You know, you take some simple little thing, there's unlimited combinations you can get with it. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Like that. Is that okay? Okay. 2:6, 157, 158. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, quoting, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. This means that he originally has three potencies, the pleasure potency, the potency of eternality, and the potency of knowledge." Wow, your hair grew back really fast.
Shape-changing reptiles.
Together, these are called the chit potency, and they are present in full in the Supreme Lord, because his Swarup Shakti is also known as chit, and are present full in the Supreme Lord, right? So they're in him in the full. For the living entities who are part and parcel of the Lord, the pleasure potency in the material world is sometimes displeasing and sometimes mixed. That's not very good odds, right? It's not saying sometimes pleasing and sometimes pleasing. No, sometimes pleasing and sometimes mixed. So it means it's displeasing and there might be some pleasing element to it. Not a great, this is not a great advertisement. This is not the case with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he is not under the influence of the material energy or its modes. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in his original form is full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. The spiritual potency in these three portions, Sat, Chit, and Ananda, assumes three different forms. Right? So this is, that's the thing, Sat, Chit, and Ananda, then those are the three, and they have the three forms. The three forms are the Vibhava, Prabhava, and Anubhava. Does that make sense? So Sat, Chit, Ananda takes on then three forms. Right? These three portions assume three forms. Yeah? We're good with that? Prabhu's cool with that? He's nodding his head. Yeah? Okay. According to the verdict of all Vedic literature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity, and the illusory energy, this material world, constitute the subject matter of knowledge. Right. Everyone should try to understand the relationship between them. First of all, one should try to understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. From the Shastras, we understand that the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the sum total of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. As stated in verse 154, Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 6:154. Yeah. Yeah, so that's why we see in the Dasamuha, you establish authority. What is authority? Right? It comes from the Shastra and from the direct meaning of the Shastra, not the Anuman, not the indirect. It comes from the direct meaning. So that's then the first thing that's established. Then what are you first, next, you're understanding Krishna, the absolute truth, and how all his energies and everything are there. Then when you understand the Lord, his energies and his pastime, then we can appreciate the Jiva, right? And then understanding the Jiva, then how does all of that hold together? That's a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva, right? Yeah. 2:6, 159 to 160. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, the three portions of the spiritual potency are called Ladini, the bliss portion, Sandini, the eternal portion, and Samvit, the knowledge portion. We accept knowledge of these three as full knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead also appears in three phases, internal, marginal, and external. These are all engaged in this devotional service and love, right? And so we see all these different things, like a few pages back, it mentions that the Icha Kriya and Jnana, the willpower, activity and existence, these things. So these are all the different features that are coming from Sat Chit Ananda, right? So that's the thing. He has these portions and they have their various phases like that. So you have to come up with all these far out names that they're there, but they're not separate. They're non-different from the Lord. 2:6, 161, 165. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, in his spiritual potency, the Supreme Lord enjoys six types of opulences. You do not accept You do not accept the spiritual potency, and this is due to your great impudence, right? We also see as even the six kinds of opulences, then as explained in the Vishnu Purana, then there, you have the six opulences, and they're attributed to manifest by Shankarshan, two by Parjumna, and two by Aniruddha. And so then also is this Sat Chit Ananda manifest, Sat manifest to, Chit manifest to, and Ananda manifest to. And like this, then he has, everything's go. So everything's connected back to these three, Sat Chit Ananda. So he's saying here is that due to your impudence, right? You just think you're so special and fabulous that you don't accept that the Lord is a person and he's full with six opulences. The Lord is the master of the potencies and the living entity is the servant of them. So that's the whole, when we mentioned, we were discussing before about how Jiva Goswami explains that if you're using Anuman on its own, that becomes the prominent. It's because you have, you have something that you want to establish. In other words, you have an agenda. starting with Anuman means I have an agenda. Now I'm going to try to take the facts and figures around me and the environment and all that and work out my agenda accordingly. So here is they want to be the Lord of all, master of the potencies. They want to say that Krishna is not the master. Everything's just Brahman, but they're very comfortable to say they're Narayan, and therefore they're the Lord of everything. They make the sun rise. They make the moon rise. They make the bubbles in the, you know, the soda pop. You know, all these kind of things they want to take credit for. But at the same time, when you talk about the Supreme Lord, they immediately bring up Brahman. So there, that's why he says your great impudence. They do have agenda. They do want to be the Supreme Lord. They do want to be the controller of all this. That's why you see us when you put them on a big elephant and ride in a big procession and call them Jagadguru. They're very, very happy. But actually, it's all illusion. You know, if a big rich guy goes riding in his car, oh, that's all illusion. But they go riding on their elephant. Oh, yes, this is, you know. That's the point. They're just impudent. Right? That's why Prabhupada says rascals. Rascal number one. That's the... The Lord is the master of potencies, and the living entity is the servant of them. They don't like the idea of eternally being servant. That is the difference between the Lord and the living entity. However, you declare that the Lord and the living entity are one and the same, right? You're saying that they're one and the same. So where they're different, you're saying they're the same. In the Bhagavad Gita, the living entity is established as the marginal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet you say the living entity is completely different from the Lord. Right? So here is a very major contradiction, is that the Lord is the master, the Jiva is the servant, but you say, no, they're the same. That way I'm God. Right? And at the same time, is then you say is that there's the Lord and his energies, and then you say the living entity is non-different. Then you say he's completely different. He's illusion. But if he's illusion, then what do you care? Then you're just an illusion. So why are you talking? So their whole basis of the philosophy is completely on an illusory position that doesn't exist. And that's why we say as the illusory potency has bound them. That's why even on the good day, it's just a transformation of goodness that they're dealing with. They're not actually dealing with transcendence. Especially Mayavadis. They never transcend. Mayavadis just go to hell, that's all. Right? They don't make it, they don't become liberated like that. So that's the difficulty. Say it's all Maya. So if it's all, it means it's all Maya, we don't exist. But then we say, no, but we're non-different Lord. We merge in the Lord. But how would, if, look at this. If we merged into the Lord, then we're illusion. We merge into the Lord, that means illusion becomes part of the Lord. So that can't happen, right? Because, and at the same time, is how did we exist? Because some illusion covered the Lord. Where did the illusion come from? So just the basis of their philosophy is complete. Is like a sieve for, you know, spaghetti. You know, after you boil the spaghetti, you pour it into that bowl that has a million holes in it. That's their philosophy. And the worst part, at the end, you don't get some nice spaghetti. You just get dry. You pour all the water through there, you get nothing. Right? Yeah. So, completely bogus. In the Bhagavad Gita, the living entity is established as the marginal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet you say that the living entity is completely different from the Lord. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego are my eightfold separated energies. Besides these inferior energies, which are material, there's another energy, a spiritual energy, and this is the living entity. And then they'll say, no, he's not spiritual, he's just illusion. And then this illusion will merge, but illusion can't. Because if it does, then that means if you as a living entity, and you're an illusion, if you then merge with Brahman, that means that portion of Brahman becomes covered by that illusion of you, and then you become a jiva. Right? Doesn't make any sense, but yeah. A spiritual energy, and this is the living entity. Living being, almighty armed one, the entire material world is sustained by the living entities. Footnote 38. Verses 164 and 165 are quotations from the Bhagavad Gita, 7, 4, and 5. Srila Prabhupada. The Brahma Sutras states, the Brahma Sutra states that according to the principle of Shakti, Shakti Mator Abhedaha, the living entity is simultaneously one with and different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Qualitatively, the living entity and the Supreme Lord are one. But in quantity, they are different. So there is oneness and there is difference. It's just they get it backwards. That's all. According to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy of Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva, the living entity and the Supreme Lord accepted as one and different at the same time. Right? So that's how we can explain these things, and they can't. Right? 26166 to 168. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. The transcendental form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is complete in eternity, cognizance, and bliss. However you describe this transcendental form as a product of material goodness. One who does not accept the transcendental form of the Lord is certainly an agnostic. Such a person should be neither seen nor touched. Indeed, he is subject to be punished by Yamaraj, right? I mean, in Manu, it talks about avoiding the Buddhists, right? And so here's covered Buddhism. So then the same point is supposed to be avoided. Like it says, if you see a Mayavadi, you know, then you're supposed to go take a bath with all your clothes on. Right? The Buddhists do not recognize the authority of the Vedas. Therefore, they are considered agnostics. However, those who have taken shelter of the Vedic scriptures yet preach agnosticism in accordance with the Mayavadi philosophy are certainly more dangerous than the Buddhists, because the Buddhists, it's obviously they're different. But the Mayavadis, then they're preaching in the Vedic literatures in accordance with the Buddhist philosophy, so that's even more dangerous. So that's why we have to be very, very careful, like we were discussing this morning, in taking our philosophy, but then you're using it to establish, material mundane upadi, you know, that we are the body, that we are all these things, but using our philosophy for it is very, very dangerous. Very dangerous. So one has to be very careful about this. So it's not a light thing. It's a very, very major thing. Srila Prabhupada. Although the Buddhists are directly opposed to Vaishnava philosophy, it can easily be understood that the Shankarites are more dangerous because they accept the authority of the Vedas, yet act contrary to Vedic instruction. Vedashraya Nastika Vada means agnosticism under the shelter of Vedic culture. Right? So in other words, they're presenting this agnosticism, the Buddhism, under the shelter of the Vedas. So you're just using the Vedas to explain Buddhist culture, that's all. And refers to the monistic philosophy of the Mayavadis. The Mayavadis' conception of spiritual existence is almost identical to the negation of material existence. Right? Because that means that it means the Shunyavad. So Nirvishesh basically is almost identical with Shunyavad. The Mayavadis believe there's nothing positive in spiritual life. As a result, they cannot understand devotional service or the worship of the Supreme Person, Satchidananda Vigraha. The Mayavadi philosophers consider deity worship and devotional service to be pratibimbavad, or the worship of a form that is a reflection of a false material form. Right? Because they'll take everything back to the false, and so therefore they take it because it all comes from material energy. Material energy is that illusion. So, yeah, they just won't have anything to do with it. But if you worship them as God, that is A-okay. But if you worship the deity as God, then that's bogus. So we can see is totally motivated. There's no purity in that at all. Thus, the Lord's transcendental form, which is eternally blissful and full of knowledge, is unknown to Mayavadi philosophers. Because they cannot receive the mercy of the Lord, they will always be bewildered by his transcendental form. Right? So because it's all Maya, that's all the more they can get. That's why they can't get beyond the mode of goodness. They may get to a very refined form of it, but they can never get beyond the mode of goodness. They can't get to transcendence. Impersonal philosophy destroys the three phases of knowledge, jnana, jnaya, and jnata. Right? As soon as one speaks of knowledge, there must be a person who is the knower, the knowledge itself, and the object of knowledge. So they get rid of all three of them. So if they get rid of all three of them, they don't exist. So if they don't exist, then they can kind of move out of the way and quit taking up space and, you know, adding to global warming, right? And just makes everybody's life fine. Mayavadi philosophy combines these three categories. Therefore, the Mayavadis cannot understand how the spiritual potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead act, because they combine everything, they can't distinguish. Because of their poor fund of knowledge, they cannot understand the distinction in the spiritual world between knowledge, the knower, and the object of knowledge. Because of this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considers the Mayavadi philosophers more dangerous than the Buddhists, because the Buddhists just say nothing's there. But these guys then, you know, try to make some fine points and all this and say, what is there? It isn't there. Okay. 2.6.169.171. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, Srila Veda Vyas presented the Vedanta philosophy for the deliverance of conditioned souls. But if one hears the commentary of Shankaracharya, everything is spoiled, right? Because you've heard all these things, and then hearing that, then you lose all the ability to differentiate between matter and spirit. You know, all that is lost. So that becomes the difficulty here. So that's why then you can't mix those things. You can't think, oh, it's just another philosophy, or what's the big deal, and all that. It doesn't believe in the relationship with the Lord, the process of devotional service, and the Lord himself. They don't believe in that. So they take these three, Satchidananda, and just blend them all together. And so they can't see the difference. Therefore, if that's not there, then we don't have the separate thing of the living entities, the form of the Lord, the place of pastimes, or the pastimes themselves. So there's nothing of value in it. It just makes a mess. That's all. The Vedanta Sutra aims at establishing that the cosmic manifestation has come into being by the transformation of the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The touchstone, after touching iron, produces volumes of gold without being changed. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests himself as the cause of manifestation by his inconceivable potency, yet he remains unchanged in his eternal transcendental form. Right. Srila Prabhupada, according to the commentary of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the purpose of the Janmadhyasya verse in the Vedanta Sutra is to establish that the cause of manifestation is a result of the transformation of the potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord is the master of innumerable eternal energies, which are unlimited. Sometimes these energies are manifested, and sometimes they are not. In any case, all energies are under his control. Therefore, he is the original energetic, the abode of all the energies. A common brain in the conditioned state cannot conceive of how these inconceivable energies abide in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how he exists in his innumerable forms as the master of both spiritual and material energies, how he is the master of both manifest and potential powers. Right? So that's the point, potential powers. The powers are there, they're potential, they may not be manifest. So that's then how you have the spiritual world expanding unlimitedly. Because the potential powers are there, and then when they manifest, then they're the manifest powers. And how contradictory potencies can abide in him. As you know, because that's logical, say, oh, this can't be possible. You can't have this and that, but it's coming from him. They work. As long as a living entity is within this material world, in the condition of illusion, he cannot understand the activities of the inconceivable energies of the Lord. Thus, the Lord's energies, though factual, are simply beyond the power of the common brain to understand. So they're there, they exist, they're a fact, but the common brain cannot understand it. And when I mean common brain, that means a brain of this material world. It doesn't mean, oh, but Sheldon will be able to understand it. No, The point is no one can understand it from the material world, right? Like that. Srila Prabhupada. Oh, no, we just read that. 26172. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. Shankaracharya's theory states that the absolute truth is transformed. By accepting this theory, the Mayavadi philosophies, thus they find fault in the Vedanta Sutra and interpret it to try to establish the theory of illusion, right? Because they're Mayavadi, so they're establishing the theory of illusion, therefore Mayavad. Srila Prabhupada. The first verse of the Brahma Sutra is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Quote, we must now inquire into the absolute truth. End quote. The second verse immediately answers Janmadyasya Yataha. The absolute truth is the original source of anything. Janmadyasya Yataha does not suggest that the original person has become transformed. Rather, it clearly indicates that he produces this cosmic manifestation through his inconceivable energy, right? So they take that first one, but they've already made a mistake at this second verse, the second sutra. That means their understanding of all the next 500 and plus sutras is wrong, right? If you're doing a calculation and you miss one sutra, then the whole thing goes wrong. So this is an important, this is also clearly explained in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8, where Krishna says, Mata Sarvam Parabhartate, from me everything emanates. He says emanates, he doesn't say I transform into everything. Otherwise, if that's what it is, why wouldn't he say it? Why is it all the things he says that this is what it happens, they say, no, it actually means this. But then why, then if everything that God says is not correct, then why are you listening? Why are you taking if Vedanta Sutra is wrong, why are you studying it? Bhagavad Gita is wrong, why are you studying it? And these two are very major works for them, right? Like that, because they study the Upanishads, the Vedanta Sutra, and the Bhagavad Gita. So they're Shruti Prasthan, Smriti Prasthan, and Nyaya Prasthan. This is also confirmed in the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1.1. Yato va imani bhutani jayante. The supreme absolute truth is that from which everything is born. Similarly, in the Mundaka Upanishad 1.1.7, it is stated, Yatorna nabhi srijate grinate cha. The Lord creates and destroys the cosmic manifestation as a spider creates a web and draws it back within itself. All these sutras indicate the transformation of the Lord's energy. It is not that the Lord undergoes direct transformation, which is called Parinamabad. However, being very anxious to protect Srila Vyasadeva from criticism, Shankaracharya became a pseudo-gentleman and put forward his theory of illusion, Vivartavad. Shankaracharya concocted this meaning of Parinamabad. And by word jugglery, he endeavored very hard to establish Parinamabad as Vivartavad. Right? So he stated that he's come as, that Parinama, that the Brahman changes. But then if you do that, then one, Vyasadeva is wrong and Brahman becomes changeable. And that's the whole point. It's eternal and unchanging. So then you have the Vivartavad, right? Means that then you have the aspect of illusion. So then he's trying to say, so it doesn't actually change, it's just an illusion that changes. So then when illusion covers a portion of Brahman, then you think that there's the material world, there's the jivas and all this and that. But then, what's the whole point? And so, from one and then they'll make that into another and another. So since all they do is interpret things, then whatever the philosophy, when they get defeated, they just interpret it again to come up with something new. So that's why you see it's be very special that we see that in the past, in the previous discussions, then Prakashananda Saraswati, how he accepted, right? And all the sannyasis accepted. And then we see that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya will accept. So these aspects are very important. Is to see is that they're actually seeking the absolute truth. They just don't know anything more. Like the four Kumaras, they're impersonal. Then they seeking. Then they meet the Lord. Then they surrender, become devotees. So that's the examples that are given. Is that no matter what the background, if they're involved in karma, it's like Dhruva Maharaj, just jealousy or envy, but he comes to the absolute truth, the person. So that aspect then is what's important. That's what's perfect. So 26172. Oh no, we've just been doing this. Okay, we're down here. The Supreme Absolute Truth is that from which everything is born. Similarly, in the Mundaka Upanishad 117, it is stated, Yatorna Nabhi Siddhate Grinate Cha. The Lord creates and destroys the cause of manifestation, as a spider creates a web and draws it back into itself. Right? So the spider, his energy is transformed. He doesn't transform. Right? It's not that he pulls out the name, then he kind of goes into it, then when he pulls it back, then he all comes back into place. All these sutras.
Finish that one.
Finish that? How come now reading it now, it seems like it's completely different?
You can read it again, of course.
Okay, yes, we did. Yeah, that's right. Okay. 26173-175. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, the theory of illusion can be applied only when the living entity identifies himself with the body, right? In other words, this aspect of Vivarta is there, but it's because the living entity identifies. Otherwise, the living entity exists, just that his existence becomes transformed into thinking he is material energy. But he still exists as the jiva. It's just an illusion, that's all. As far as the cosmic manifestation is concerned, it cannot be called false, although it is certainly temporary. Right? Because they're saying it's false, it's not even here. We're saying it's here, it's factual, but it's temporary. That's why we say it is false, because it's not eternal like the living entity. Means it's manifestation. And the living entity, it's also illusion or false that the living entity can find enjoyment in it. Because otherwise, then why is people frustrated? They would do these things and they'd be happy. And then, they have their home, they'd be happy. Then they add on to that, they got a job, they'd be more happy. It just keep increasing. But it doesn't. You get something, it disappears. You get another, it disappears. The happiness, right? You're so happy you got the job, and then after some time, you're grumbly about your job, right? You're so happy you got the money, but after paying tax, then you're grumpy again, or money and the time's up and you have to go back to work. So whatever happens is always going to be the end of it, and there's an illusion there. So Lord Chaitanya is pointing out this is where the theory of illusion can be applied. Not that Vivartavad material world doesn't exist. No, identifying with it, that's where the problem is. The transcendental vibration Omkara is the sound form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All Vedic knowledge and this common cosmic manifestation are produced from the sound representation of the Supreme Lord. The subsidiary vibration, Tattvamasi, you are the same, is meant for the understanding of the living entity, but the principal vibration is Omkara. Not caring for Omkara, Shankaracharya has stressed the vibration Tattvamasi. So now he's pointing out is that this, so he's just going through their philosophy and just showing that no, this is, when you're talking about Brahman, it means the Supreme Person. He's the source of Brahman. When you're talking about how all this comes about, your actual philosophy, like we have a Chintabheda Veda Tattva, then so they have the Parinamavad, and then to cover that, then they put the Vivartavad. Is that no, is Brahman can't transform, the energy's transformed. And in this transformation, the illusion is that we think we are that. So then And so therefore he's given the tattvamasi. It means we are the transcendental, but it's omkar is the main, it's the complete. For someone's understanding, then you say you are that. It means you're not of this material body, you're the spiritual nature. That's what is there. But it doesn't mean you're not the soul and that you're not an individual. It's accepted as a primary vibration by one who does not accept pranava, the transcendental sound incarnation of the holy name of the Lord, as the chief principle in the Vedic literature. By word juggling, Shankaracharya tried to create an illusory presentation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his relationship with the living entities and the cosmic manifestation, right? So you chit achit Ishwar, and what's the relation? Tattvamasi is a warning to the living entity not to mistake the body for the self, right? Because Tattvamasi is coming from the Upanishads. Therefore, Tattvamasi is especially meant for the conditioned soul. But Omkara, then it represents the whole package. The Supreme Lord, the living entity, his energies, his pastimes, his realm, everything is within that. 26176-177. Right, so therefore, because they're conditioned, they relate to it very nicely and they take that. Well, Omkara, then it being transcendental, they're unable to appreciate. Thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu criticized Shankaracharya's Sharira Kabhasya as imaginary, and he pointed out hundreds of faults in it. Right, as imaginary means he's made it up. It's not the direct meaning of what's said there. And he pointed out hundreds of faults. So here, the major faults have been pointed out. These are the fundamentals of the thing. Then you can get into fine points in that. It says hundreds. To defend Shankaracharya, however, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya presented unlimited opposition. The Bhattacharya presented various types of false arguments with pseudo-logic and tried to defeat his opponent in many ways. However, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refuted all these arguments and established his own conviction. Srila Prabhupada. The word Vedanta indicates that a main point or establishing his own point, somebody tries to refute the other person's argument, right? So that's the meaning of Vedanta. It's just argument, you know, or tarka, is that you don't establish your own point and make it true. You just try to find fault on the other person's or just try to defend what it is. No, but anything like this. When one does not touch the direct meaning but tries to divert attention by misinterpretation, he engages in chala, right? So then chala means I'm taking it here and by using some synonyms or other things, I shift it to some other thing. And then in that position, I argue it, right? So, you know, like you see so much of the time, you say, yes, so we have to be very strict. And then, oh, but, you know, being strict, that's the whole problem is because, you know, we're not considering the other person and everything like that. It's all just about this. And what about them as an individual and all that? So that's chala. They can't establish their own philosophy because they don't have one. But they'll try to defeat yours by using this chala. That's it. That's why you see is that so much of the, when you're dealing with issues, it's all off of a word. And it's being interpreted in a particular way, not necessarily the way that the acharyas are giving it. And they'll stick to that because that's the only way that their seemingly or their philosophy has any meaning. So that's then he's saying what Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is doing. He's just using chala, changing the meanings, this, that, and using other things like that. So means trying to refute the arguments of the other party. Right, so they just shift it to establish their own, which they don't. And they just try to argue with the other and defeat their point. Find a fault in there. Oh, you use the word like this now, but now. Again, not working.
Marge, I just.
You can hear us?
I can hear you, but
we're on the
camera.
Oh, okay. So it's getting too slow.
Yeah.
Aha. Okay. 26, 178 to 179. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the central point of all relationships, sambandha. Acting in devotional service to him is one's real occupation, abhideya. Right? Because it said acting in relationship to him means you understand the relationship with the Lord as the central to all things. Then you act in that relationship, that's abhideya, because Krishna is everything. So therefore, acting in relationship to that, that's abhideya. So all your activities are in connection with Krishna. And the attainment of love of God is the ultimate goal of life, prayojana. These three subject matters are described in the Vedic literature. If one tries to explain the Vedic literature in a different way, he's indulging in imagination. Any interpretation of the self-evident Vedic version is simply imaginary. Right, so here then, again, we see the sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana is being very clearly brought out. That's because he's Satchidananda, therefore there's sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Everything goes in. He's known as the Lord of Threes, Srila Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Lord Krishna confirms this statement. Vedaischa sever aham eva vedyaha. The actual purpose in reading the Vedas is to learn how to become a devotee of the Supreme Lord. The Lord himself advises, manmanab hava madpakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Bhagavad Gita 9:34. Therefore, after studying the Vedas, one must then execute devotional service by thinking always of the Supreme Lord, manmana, becoming his devotee, worshiping him, and always offering him obeisances. This is called Vishnu Aradhana, and it's the supreme occupational duty of all human beings. It is properly discharged in the Varnashram Dharma system, which divides society into Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, and Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. This is the whole scheme of the Vedic civilization, right? So the point is I'm engaging myself in the Lord's service. What activities do I do? I do what's recommended in scripture. So I'm following the Pancharatra and I'm following the Varnashram aspects, right? Because the two don't have a problem there, because Varnashram is to support pure devotional service and the Pancharatra is there to engage us properly in devotional service. But yeah, so this is the whole scheme of the Vedic civilization, right? So yeah. However, this institution is very difficult to establish in this age. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advises that we not worry about the Vedic system of Varnashram Dharma. Rather, we should take directly to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra and simply hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead from the pure devotee. This is the process recommended by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is the purpose for studying the Vedas, right? Because then you come to this conclusion about that chanting the holy name in the association of the pure devotees, hearing from them about pure devotional service. Then this is the real focus that we have. And then for us, then Varnashram and Pancharatric system then are supportive of that. In other words, the Bhagavat becomes the prominent, and then Pancharatric then is supporting that, and then the Vedic is then giving support behind that. So as we need, then we take support. Yeah. One should always remember that all the Vedic literatures are self-evident. No one is allowed to interpret the Vedic verses. If one does so, he indulges in imagination, and that has no value, right? So they're self-evident as it goes again. So we shaved again. Yeah, I'm impressed, okay? Srila Prabhupada writes in his teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 26. Thus, Lord Chaitanya exposed many defects in the Mayavadi philosophy. And although Bhattacharya tried to establish himself by logic and word jugglery, Lord Chaitanya was able to maintain himself from his attacks. The Lord established that Vedic literature is meant for three things: understanding our relationship with the absolute Supreme Personality of Godhead, acting according to that understanding, and achieving the highest perfection of love, life, love of Godhead. Anyone who tries to prove that the Vedic literatures aim at anything else is of necessity a victim of his own imagination. Right? So here Prabhupada said very clearly that these three are what knowledge is about. So therefore, how are, you know, our relationship, who are we, who's the absolute truth, what's our relationship, then according to that relationship, how we're supposed to act. And then we are trying to achieve perfection from that, but what's the highest perfection? That's love of God. So that's then. And if you have any other idea than this, then you're a victim. Necessarily, you're a victim of your own imagination. This means that's just the way it is. 26180182. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. Actually, there is no fault on the part of Shankaracharya. He simply carried out the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He had to imagine some kind of interpretation, and therefore he presented a kind of Vedic literature that is full of atheism. Addressing Lord Shiva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, "Please make the general populace averse to me by imagining your own interpretation of the Vedas. Also, cover me in such a way that people will take more interest in advancing material civilization just to propagate a population bereft of spiritual knowledge." Footnote 39. This is a quotation from the Padma Puran, Uttarakhanda, 6231. Lord Shiva informed Goddess Durga, the superintendent of the material world, "In the age of Kali, I take the form of a Brahmana and explain the Vedas through false scriptures in an atheistic way, similar to Buddha, because then by this, then they have their material situation, because before they were trying to use the Vedas to advance the material situation in a sinful way. So you wanted them to just move on from that. So they'll forget the Vedas and then they'll go back to their just regular material situation. And being in that regular material situation, then now Lord Chaitanya can preach to them. Srila Prabhupada. The word Brahmana Murtina in this verse refers to the founder of Mayavada philosophy, Shankaracharya, who was born in the Malabar district of southern India. Mayavada philosophy states that the Supreme Lord, the living entities in the cosmic manifestation, are all transformations of illusory energy. To support this atheistic theory, the Mayavadis cite false scriptures, which make people bereft of transcendental knowledge and addicted to fruitive activities and mental speculation. So they just take up their regular material life. This verse is a quotation from the Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda 25:7. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Oh, excuse me, 26183. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became very much astonished upon hearing this. He became stunned and said nothing. Right, so that ends this part of the discussion between the two of them. Right, so next now, then he heard this, Shankaracharya's philosophy been defeated. So then now the next intelligent point would be, okay, so now please explain it. What's the proper understanding rather than just your philosophy is defeated, so you get up and you know, just do nothing. No, okay, so then what's the real meaning? So that's then what will be now the next. So the next we have the Atmarama verses and its explanations. Okay, so we'll stop here for today. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.